This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, like many, I've been watching the debate on healthcare in Washington. This week, work on reform legislation took a major step forward when the Senate Finance Committee voted out a final bill yesterday, 14-9, with Senator Snow voting with the Democrats. Now attention shifts to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who will merge the finance bill with the Senate's Health, Education, and Labor Committee bill.
You're right, Mark, and it remains to be seen how the public option will be debated before the full Senate. Other major issues of disagreement that have been kicked down the road include some pretty significant ones: large subsidies for insurance companies, the high cost of coverage for low-income people, and that's among the supporters of the bill.
In the next 2 weeks, you'll see different pacing than we've experienced over the past month, and Senator Reid will have lots of negotiating to do, mostly with Democrats, as the Republicans have taken themselves out of the debate.
And those will be interesting negotiations because the Senate Democrats have some very passionate and very well-informed views.
Yes, and we have some interesting conversations coming up on the show with key members in both the House and Senate in the next few weeks as the bill evolves.
And we've been hearing from many of you. We got one email about a program enhancement. Our listener was in Ireland during our first three shows, and he suggests that we supplement our audio podcast with photographs and a slideshow during the podcast.
Would I have to wear a tie?
You might. We'll see about that. But please keep those emails coming to conversations@chc1.com. We love hearing from you.
Each week we highlight innovations that are making a profound impact in the way healthcare is delivered in America.
We've heard about the successful public option called Healthy San Francisco, and we've discussed the growing convenient care industry. And last week, we focused in on group health care and the benefits of centering pregnancy for mothers and for babies.
And this week, we're discussing a topic that has touched all of us, the waiting game to get in to see your doctor. That's sure to get everyone's attention.
So stay tuned to learn more about a model that's been embraced by private practices, specialists, generalists, public health clinics, even the Veterans Administration. It's based on a few simple rules: supply, demand, and doing today's work today.
It's an idea that's borrowed from the assembly line, just-in-time delivery.
It's called open or advanced access, and we'll be talking with Dr. Mark Murray. Dr. Murray helped create this system that really eliminates delays in care and improves both patient and provider satisfaction. But first, here's a look at healthcare headlines from our producer, Lucy Nalpathanchil.
I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil with this week's headline news. The waiting is over. As Mark and Margaret mentioned, the Senate Finance Committee has approved a bill after weeks of deliberations and hundreds of amendments. In a 14-9 vote, the committee passed a 10-year, $829 billion reform bill. Senator Olympia Snow of Maine, the lone Republican to vote yes, told the committee that she may not agree with the entire bill, but she called it an important starting point as the full Senate looks to debate final reform legislation in the coming weeks.
There are many, many miles to go in this legislative journey. People do have concerns about what we will do with reform, but at the same time, they want us to continue working. And that is what my vote represents. It's to continue working the process.
Senator Snow also says she's concerned with any changes the full Senate will make that will affect the Finance Committee's provisions in the bill relating to costs. Finance Chair Senator Max Baucus applauded the work of his committee, praising members on both sides of the aisle. He says there have been many hearings on health care reform in the last 2 years, and his intent from the beginning was to report out a bill that would pass on the Senate floor and be a part of final health care reform legislation.
We all understand we cannot afford the status quo. We all understand Americans are looking for common sense solutions. And I think that's exactly what we've achieved in this committee. Ours is a balanced bill that does bend the cost curve, that does lay the foundation for continued progress. It lowers the federal deficit, ends insurance industry discrimination, expands coverage, and improves quality.
The Finance Committee's bill does not include a public option. It remains to be seen how Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid will merge the bill with the Senate Health, Education, and Labor bill approved earlier this summer, which included a public option. Once the full Senate approves a bill, it will have to conference with the House before both chambers send a final bill to President Obama. Hey. This week, we're exploring open or advanced access. It's a system that helps doctors and other healthcare providers schedule today's work today. How does that relate to you? Well, the concept can eliminate a lot of the frustration anyone has ever felt when they've called their doctor for an appointment and were told the wait was 1 to several weeks out. Dr. Douglas Iliff has a private solo practice in Topeka, Kansas. His staff includes 3 full-time registered nurses, a receptionist, and some part-time employees. He's been using a version of open or advanced access since the late 1980s.
It's what I've done from the first day I opened my doors. The only important thing is that if a patient needs to be seen today, they get seen today.
The idea behind advanced access is balancing supply and demand, a principle that may sound better suited to the manufacturing sector than, say, healthcare. In fact, that's where the idea stems from. Manufacturers have learned to reduce inventory and avoid delays to improve the bottom line. Dr. Mark Murray and colleague, registered nurse Catherine Tantau, created Advanced Access to help healthcare providers see their patients when patients want to be seen, while at the same time improving efficiency by eliminating no-shows or cancellations. Pete Gutierrez is a service line administrator at Denver Community Health Services, the nation's largest community health center program. Gutierrez implemented Advanced Access to its primary care division in 2003. He says Denver's CHS handles 350,000 visits a year, and backlogs were common before advanced access. Gutierrez says this happened because the farther out an appointment was booked, the less likely a patient would keep the appointment.
We were experiencing across our department a 35% no-show rate, and so we were trying to overbook to try and get an effective productivity out of the resources that we had. And we had been doing that for many years, and when we discovered open access scheduling, as it was called then, we really felt as though we had an opportunity to impact that no-show rate.
Gutierrez says it's a lot of work transitioning to advanced access from the old way of handling appointments. First, he says the provider or individual office has to figure out how many patients the practice has. Not as simple as it sounds. It has to look backward to see how many visits per year on average those patients make, how many calls for appointments there are, and then, most importantly, determine just how many appointments the practice can make available. That's basically a function of resources, how many providers, how many hours they're available to see patients, and even other resources like how many exam rooms are available. Once Denver Community Health Services balanced its supply and demand, the effects of advanced access were instantaneous.
We went from that 35% average across our department down to under 10% with each one of our sites immediately. It happens within the first month after you go live with open access.
Since 2003, he says the no-show rate has creeped from 10 to 15%, but he says the system has still shown a 50% improvement. Open or advanced access has also helped the country's largest healthcare system. The Federal Veterans Administration has more than 7 million patients. At one time, veterans who needed care were waiting at least 60 days from the time they scheduled an appointment to actually being seen by a provider. The VA recognized this as a problem and started working with Institute for Healthcare Improvement, or IHI, in 1999 to learn ways of eliminating wait times. Dr. Mike Davies, Director of Systems Redesign for the VA, describes the hardest part in making the change.
Changing people's minds, you know, developing this vision that it was possible to offer appointments on the same day a patient's requested the appointments. No one had thought that way before. Everyone assumed that waiting times were inevitable.
Because of the VA's sheer size, the federal agency developed computer software that connected every one of its patients with the provider. This system allowed the VA to keep track of demand and then feed it to individual providers who could measure its patient panels and balance its resources or supply with demand. Dr. Davies adds advanced access has helped the VA in other ways.
Everything gets better, not only your operational efficiency, and the patients notice this with patient satisfaction scores getting better, but also the clinical care gets better. We found we delivered better clinical care when patients didn't wait.
Dr. Davies calls advanced access a journey of change for the VA. In 2002, the agency decreased wait times to 28 days. In 2006, 65% of patients were able to see a provider in 2 weeks after making the appointment. Today, 85% of patients are seeing a provider within 14 days. It's a marked improvement for the VA since 1999, when the average wait time was 2 months. Open or advanced access isn't just suited for large health systems. Dr. Iliff from Kansas says any provider can use the scheduling process. In fact, he says small practices have been operating like this for years.
You know, my great-grandfather was a family doctor in southeast Kansas. He saw every patient who needed to be seen every day. They just showed up at the door. There's no appointment system. Large practices, on the other hand, get to be pretty impersonal pretty quickly. There's a lot of sharing of personnel. You don't necessarily know the patient you're talking to because they're somebody else's patient. And so I think that open access has really caught on as a concept because large practices had a real big problem that they realized needed to be solved.
To learn more about how healthcare providers from many backgrounds have adapted to open or advanced access, Mark and Margaret spoke with Dr. Mark Murray, principal of Mark Murray & Associates, a healthcare consulting firm.
Dr. Murray, thanks for speaking with us today.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome, Dr. Murray. Your model, this advanced access, has really had a profound effect on how long patients have to wait to get an appointment. But your first success was your own office at Kaiser Permanente, where you reduced wait times from 55 days to 1 day. How did you do it, and how does it work?
Well, I think that one of the key things here is to recognize that the term advanced access implies a product, you know, a set of required unpleasant behaviors. It's really not that. This is really a philosophy, and I think the philosophy starts at the end point. You know, if we want to get patients an appointment, you know, what they want, when they want it, and we want people, our clinicians, to see their own patients and not make them wait, if that's the end point, then we have to think about how do we get the capacity, the space on the schedule to do that? And there's a number of different ways to do it that don't work well that I'm not going to walk through. But this the best way to do that is to make sure that the doctor's panel size, the number of patients or clients that provider is responsible for, is right, that it's not too many and not too few. So make sure that the basic overall supply and demand is going to work well. Then work down the backlog, get rid of the current warehouse or inventory of work, and then just start changing the way that we think and changing the way that we work by offering an appointment today for any problem, basically doing today's work today.
In your writings, you've said that the issue is not just about having a different scheduling system, it's about delay reduction. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the basic issue here really grows out of the premise that the most efficient, effective, and satisfying way to work is to balance supply and demand. If we live in an environment where demand exceeds capacity, then we will fail. I mean, there's no way around that. We will fail. We can play on the edges, but we will fail. So we have to get an overall balance of the capacity to the demand. Then, again, the most effective, efficient, and satisfying way to work is to take our capacity and put it as close to the demand as possible. So this whole philosophy is around how do we understand what our capacity is and match that demand as soon as possible. So it's really about delay reduction.
So supply and demand, not probably words that we so often hear mm-hmm. from our clinical colleagues, and that's really where your system starts. But in your experience, is that data easy to gather at most practices? Do people know what their supply and demand is? Is it something they're already aware of?
It's not easy to gather initially because we don't look at that. You know, but to me, this is like gravity. It's the basic fundamental underlying dynamic that runs our business. That's what we do. Every day, all day long, one patient at a time, what we're doing is we're matching using our capacity to meet the customer demand. The choice is not whether we're going to do that, but the choice is whether we're going to do it well or do it poorly. So we have to measure. And there's three lenses through which we need to measure. Number one is what's the waiting time? What's the current waiting time? Is it stable, which implies that supply and demand are balanced, but we may be late? what's the daily demand, supply, and activity? What is it that we do? What could we do? And what is the demand? And then the third lens, which is a broader overview, is how many patients do I have? How many visits are they going to generate? And does that reconcile with how many days I work and how many appointments I can deliver per day? The basic supply and demand mm-hmm. equation.
Mm-hmm. You know, customer demand and customer satisfaction seem to go hand in hand. And we know patients are happy seeing their own provider. In healthcare, we call that continuity of care. Does using advanced access actually affect the continuity of care for patients?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the fundamental basic dynamic here is that we have to balance supply and demand at the individual doctor level. So the focus here is basically see your own and don't make them wait. So we recognize that we have two real problems to solve. One is the delay problem, and one is the continuity problem. You cannot solve one without the other. They are not independent. We have to solve both of them together.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. We're speaking with Dr. Mark Murray, principal of Mark Murray Associates, a healthcare consulting firm. Dr. Murray helped create Advanced Access, the revolutionary redesign of appointment scheduling at doctors' offices and other healthcare providers.
So, Dr. Murray, I'd be interested in hearing a little bit about different types of practices and your thoughts on whether there are certain kinds of practices or specialties where you think Advanced Access just doesn't work or is particularly challenging. Is it really more suited to primary care, or is it relevant in other practices as well?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. And the gravity exists for all of us. So matching supply and demand exists for all of us. Are there going to be some environments where there's a greater challenge around matching supply and demand? Yeah, of course there is. If we're working with a specialty care practice that's highly diluted, where the clinician is not in the office but infrequently, then the demand will come in a regular, normal, predictable kind of way, but the supply is sporadic. So what that means is that it's more difficult to match the supply to that demand immediately. There will be a time lapse simply because of the dilution effect. But does that change the basic dynamic? No, it doesn't. So the issues around the payment scheme, the specialty, and other particular kind of nuances of environments, that doesn't really matter. What really matters is how do we effectively understand what our capacity is, measure it, see how often it's present, its frequency of presence, and then compare it to the demand, which is very predictable. So the dynamic, the fundamental dynamic is the same. There are some challenges in particular practices, but it's still the same.
You know, I think that for most practices, the boogeyman in the room is that there will be days, and maybe a lot of those days, where there will be no way to see all the patients who call, and other days where income and productivity will suffer because of low demand. But this program now has had a long track record. What would you say to those concerns?
I think that a lot of that is, I understand the concerns, but a lot of the reality is a myth. Let's take a look at what we do now. If we take a look at our current schedules at the end of the day, the activity, and let's say the doctor has a schedule of 25 appointments scheduled. What's the likelihood of the doctor seeing exactly 25? About a third of the time. It's most of the time, two-thirds of the time, it's either above that or below that. So what we're dealing here with is variation. Demand will vary. Supply actually varies more than demand, but demand varies. We are already dealing with variation. When we eliminate the waiting time or minimize the waiting time and learn strategies around how to predict and understand demand variation and supply variation and matching them, what we find in our experience is that range of variation and those range of fears, I have too much work, I don't have enough work, that range is actually reduced. So the day becomes far more predictable using these strategies than it does currently. So that those fears about too much work, too little work, that's actually a myth.
Hmm. Now, Dr. Murray, you've done work with some pretty large systems, I know, both here in the United States and abroad. One of those I'd like to talk about is the Veterans Administration, the VA system, a large network, certainly no stranger to complaints about delivering efficient care to veterans, and maybe one of the reasons is just the sheer size of the agency. But tell us how advanced access has helped the VA system, and really thus how it's helped veterans.
Well, the VA system is very complex and very old, and but in the recent past has made tremendous efforts to transform itself and to change itself. So there's been a focus in the VA system over the last number of years around addressing the issues of waiting time. And they've done a tremendous job in a very big system in incorporating a multiple set of new ideas and new tools to make those ideas work. So they've really made tremendous strides, both in primary care and in specialty care, particularly around tools and measurement and around a new philosophy around minimizing their waiting times.
Dr. Murray, Conversations on Healthcare focuses on innovations in healthcare delivery. What other innovations are you working on, and whose work should we be keeping an eye on?
Well, I think some of the innovations really are going to arise in IT stuff, where we're really moving towards an electronic health record. An electronic health record is more than just typewritten clinic notes. An electronic health record really allows us to gather and keep information for a whole practice, and it allows actually us to be able to use our resources far more effectively. Not so much the doctor resources, but the help resources. So some of the innovations I see are how do we get the team to work more effectively together given the freedom that the electronic health record has given us. The electronic health record also allows us to measure things in ways that we haven't measured before. To look at, a continuous measurement of things like minutes behind, how many minutes is the doctor behind in the day. To be able to look at things like demand, supply, and activity. To be able to use statistical process control to look at variation in demand. So it allows us a lot of opportunity and information in that area. So I see most of the innovations coming in that arena.
Great, and very intriguing to think about. We've been speaking with Dr. Mark Murray, principal of Mark Murray Associates, a healthcare consulting firm. Dr. Murray helped create Advanced Access. Thank you for speaking with us, Dr. Murray.
All right, thank you.
Each week, Conversations on Healthcare highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of communities in everyday lives.
This week, we focus on a program that helps get kids reading, babies looking at books, and parents reading to their children. Lucy?
Reach Out and Read was developed by doctors and early childhood educators. The program was founded in 1989 at Boston City Hospital, now Boston Medical Center, after pediatricians and nurse practitioners realized the regular interaction with young children and parents at routine pediatric checkups could help communicate the importance of parents reading to their kids. Healthcare providers who participate in the program give the parent age and even language-appropriate books at each checkup, starting at 6 months and continuing to age 5. The goal of Reach Out and Read is to encourage parents to read aloud to their child, while also helping the young boy or girl have at least 10 books in their home library by the time they start kindergarten. Why is this important? Research has shown that reading aloud gives children a rich exposure to language, much better than the words they hear during a television or radio program. And children who are read to regularly also are more prepared for school, an important outcome when noting that 1/3 of children enter school unprepared to learn. The program has such strong support that it now reaches almost 4 million children annually in 4,500 locations, including more than 25% of children who live at or near poverty. More information about how to bring this initiative to your community can be found at reachoutandread.org. Reach Out and Read makes reading books part of a healthy childhood. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.